Welcome to The Point. I'm Amy Vince in for Mindy Todd. And today, our monthly book show, it is our monthly book show, and the theme is snow, and not just because of Dan's weather forecast. This was something that Jill had decided a while ago. Joining us, retired reference librarian Jill Erickson. Great to see you.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. And Autumn Hassett, executive director of the Catuit Library. Hello and welcome.
Good morning.
So, Jill, where did this idea of snow as a theme for books come from?
Well, that's a real good question. And I think that part of it was we had already had some snow prior than our most recent snow. And I was like, snow? We got snow? Because so often we don't get a lot of snow here, or we get pummeled. It goes either way, having lived here for quite some time now. So I thought, well, let me look and see what I have in the way of snow books. And it turns out there are lots of snow books, and lots of them were already on my shelves. But also there were lots of snow books having to do with all kinds of things that happen with snow, whether it be snowmen, snow women, skis, winter blizzards. There are lots of different versions of how you can enjoy snow, which not everyone does. It's the shelving we don't like.
So, Autumn, this was
shoveling.
Jill's idea. So, Autumn, what was your reaction when you heard about the theme? Was that...
Well, Jill sent me an email, and she said the topic is, I think you said frost, maybe, and then you emailed me back quickly. No, it's snow, and these are very different things.
That's right. So I recall doing that, yes.
Yes, and similarly, many books on my shelves have to do with snow, because one of my favorite fiction situations when I'm reading is when there is a snowy mystery and people are trapped, kind of like an Agatha Christie style book. I just love that trap door. There's a snowy climate and there's trouble a-brewing. So I had many books, but I needed to consult the library catalog to find some other books to share with you all, so they weren't all mysteries in the snow.
In a snowstorm.
Yes. I was also amazed when I was looking for books how many picture books there are involving snow. I mean, like, lots and lots and lots of picture books, which I always try to bring a few. But this, I mean, I could have done the whole show just with picture books. We're not doing that. We're doing something
for
everyone. But
kids love snow. It's made for kids.
I think that's probably true. And they don't have to drive in it. So it makes it even better for them.
Okay, so let's get started, Joe. What's your first?
Well, my first is very close to my heart, because I've had this book for a very long time, and it was the first book that I thought of when I said snow. It's A Child's Christmas in Wales by Dylan Thomas, and this particular edition was done by New Directions Book, and it has woodcuts by Ellen Raskin, and the woodcuts are as lovely as the story. And when I opened this up, I pulled it off the shelf, and I was like, yeah, I got it. And I opened it up, and what do I see? But my friend Kathy had written in it to Jill because it snowed last night for the first time. And that's from November 1971. So I've had this for a very long time. And it is just such a lovely... Both the illustrations and the text are just lovely. And I'll read a little bit from it because you should all go out and read the rest of it. But this is the snow part of it. One Christmas was so much like another in those years around the sea town corner, now and out of all sound except the distant speaking of the voices I sometimes hear a moment before sleep, that I can never remember whether it snowed for 6 days and 6 nights when I was 12, or whether it snowed for 12 days and 12 nights when I was six. And then here's another bit. Years and years and years ago, when I was a boy, when there were wolves and whales and birds the color of red flannel petticoats whisk past the harp-shaped hills, when we sang and wallowed all night and day in caves that smelt like Sunday afternoons in damp front farmhouse parlors, and we chased with the jawbones of deacons, the English and the bears, before the motor car, before the wheel, before the Duchess-faced horse, when we rode the daft and happy hills bareback, it snowed and it snowed. But here, a small boy says, it snowed last year, too. I made a snowman, and my brother knocked it down, and I knocked my brother down, and then we had tea. And here's just a little bit more of it. It's so beautifully written, and this is where, at the very end, looking through my bedroom window out into the moonlight and the unending smoke-colored snow, I could see the lights in the windows of all all the other houses on our hill and hear the music rising from them up the long, steadily falling night. I turned the gas down. I got into bed. I said some words to the close and holy darkness, and then I slept. This is A Child's Christmas in Wales by Dylan Thomas, and it's just beautifully written, and it's a lot about snow.
Do you know, what's the publication date? When was that first, do you know?
Well, I don't know if this first. This would not have been the first one, because this was put together some other time. But this says, but it does have the original copyright.
Yes, I'm curious.
Okay. Copyright was 1954, and this edition was first published in 1959. And this was the 12th printing, so it had been around, 1971.
Right, so. There you go. All right. Autumn, what do you have to start?
Well, this is a classic by Jan Brett, The Mitten, which I'm sure everyone has heard of.
Yes.
But this one's particularly special because this one, Jill, similar to you, this was my copy of The Mitten. And I obviously...
We both became librarians.
We became librarians. And I must have been very protective because I wrote my name once, I crossed it out, and I wrote it bigger a second time in my copy of the book.
Just to be clear.
But this book, it's something that I just remember being in elementary school at my in library class at my elementary school, and the librarian, Mrs. Walters, would read this book to us during the Christmas season. And so I just have a lot of fond memories of this book. And, you know, the main character, she really wants a pair of snow white mittens. One goes missing, and then all of the animals burrow in it. And it's just such a lovely story if you're reading to children. The illustrations, I mean, I think the illustrations are just top notch in Jan Brett's books. So that was my first pick, the snow.
All right, moving on.
Okay, moving on. I have another book that I love very much, specifically about what it says about snow. It's called Apes and Angels by J.B. Priestley. I probably bought this at a Falmouth book show, you know, the book thing in the summer. But it is, again, one of those beautiful things about the beginnings of snow. And this section is called, they're all essays. This one is called First Snow. The first fall of snow is not only an event, but it is a magical event. You go to bed in one kind of world and wake up to find yourself in another quite different. And if this is not enchantment, then where is it to be found? The very stealth, the eerie quietness of the things makes it more magical. If all the snow fell at once in one shattering crash, awakening us in the middle of the night, the event would be robbed of its wonder. But it flutters down. Soundlessly, hour after hour, while we are asleep. Outside the closed curtains of the bedroom, a vast transformation scene is taking place, just as if a myriad elves and brownies were at work, and we turn and yawn and stretch and know nothing about it. And then, what an extraordinary change it is! It is as if the house you're in had been dropped down in another continent. Even the inside, which has not been touched, seems different. Every room appearing smaller and cozier, just as if some power were trying to turn it into a woodcutter's hut or a snug log cabin. Outside, where the garden was yesterday, there's now a white and glistening level, and the village beyond is no longer your own familiar cluster of roofs, but a village of an old German fairy tale. And it goes on to just keep talking about how amazing it is when you first have snow arrive, and it is prettier. And indeed, because the first snow, I thought, that's it. We have to do snow.
But also, the magic makes me think of being a kid when the next step would be you'd wake up, there'd be snow, it would be this alien landscape, and then you hear school's been canceled, and it's a snow day. So it's even more magical.
And plus, you don't have to shovel if you're very small.
<We'll drive. laughs> So
this is First Snow is the essay, and it is in a collection called Apes and Angels by J.B. Priestley.
Okay.
My next book is Sugar on Snow by Nan Parson Rossiter. And this book was gifted to me at my baby shower, almost eight years ago, by a family friend in New Hampshire. And so they're very much into the whole sugaring and syrup, maple syrup industry up there. And so this story chronicles, it's a family farm of a father and two sons and getting them to participate in the annual tapping of the trees and making of the maple syrup. But I didn't know this prior to receiving this book, but there is a legend in the back, and it talks about how there was a Native American chief back in the day on an early spring day, and there was still snow on the ground when they were tapping for the maple syrup. But he had accidentally struck the tree with his axe and then was called away to do something, but he left the bowl on the ground. And no one noticed that the clear liquid sap began to drip out of the tree. It went into the bowl. And then later that day, the chief's wife took the bowl and was making her evening meal. And everyone went mad crazy for the dinner that night. They were just like, what did you do in your cooking? What did you do in the kitchen? And she had no idea because this bowl she had left outside and it filled with sap. And then she figured out that it was the sap from the maple tree. And so that kind of ties into the legend of how we came to make maple syrup back from the Native Americans in the day. But it's a really heartwarming story. And I just loved that it talked about snow in the springtime because of when they tap the trees. It's not a traditional winter book and the first snow, but it's rather that lingering snow.
The March snow,
living on a farm and trying to get your kids to help when they want to be children and do fun things. So I think parents and kids would really enjoy this book when reading it together.
And the title and author again of that one?
It's Sugar on Snow by Nan Parson Rossiter.
Thank you. All right, Jill.
Well, how can we not talk about snow and have at least one poem about snow?
There are lots of them, I'm sure. But this is one, actually, that a friend of mine told me about. And she said, oh, you've got it. This is one you have to do. And, of course, because it's Mary Oliver, we do have to do it. And it really is lovely. It's called First Snow. The snow began here this morning and all day continued, its white rhetoric everywhere, calling us back to why, how, when such beauty and what the meaning, such an oracular fever flowing past windows, an energy it seemed would never ebb, never settle less than lovely, and only now, deep into night, it has finally ended. The silence is immense, and the heavens still hold a million candles. Nowhere the familiar things, stars, the moon, the darkness we expect to nightly turn from. Trees glitter like castles of ribbons. The broad fields smolder with light. A passing creek bed lies, heaped with shining hills. And though the questions that have assailed us all day remain, not a single answer has been found. Walking out now into the silence and the light under the trees and through the fields feels like one. And that's First Snow by Mary Oliver. It's in her New and Selected Poems, Volume 1, if you would like to read it again. It's a lovely, lovely First Snow poem. Always good to read on the First Snow.
Okay, Autumn.
All right. So earlier this year, I picked up a new habit, and there's nothing like picking up a new habit when you're trying to finish graduate school and work and be a parent. Really a new hobby, I should say. I learned how to knit because my library hosted a knitting fundraiser, and we had a Norwegian-Irish knitter come, and she taught us how to knit these amazing hats. So I've been knitting like crazy for the last few
months.
Yes. But libraries just have so much information and so many great knitting books if you haven't checked them out. So I found this book called 65 New Christmas Balls to Knit by Arnie and Carlos, and they have super Norwegian last names, so I can get you the names. But really just Arnie and Carlos, that's all you have to know. And this book was just so exciting to me and was really testing my limits of knitting. But one of the patterns in it is this snowflake ball, if you guys can see that. And you basically repeat this pattern four times on double pointed needles to make a ball, and then you stuff it with wool. And
you did this?
Well, I tried. I didn't successfully do the snowflake yet. I've tried some of the other patterns and just some plain colored ones. But I kind of fell in love with this Nordic way of crafting. And if you've heard the terms like bimble and fika, it's like slowing down and being really intentional. And I think sometimes in our society, we're so quick. We're always on our devices. We're hungry for that short form content. And this type of activity really forces you to slow down and sit with yourself with a bunch of needles and try to make these Christmas balls as best as you can. So I found this book really delightful, and I thought that the winter themes and the snow themes were really fun.
I had never heard of Christmas balls. Am I just...
I have heard of those two guys because they wrote a number of books yes. before that one, and they're really funny.
Their YouTube is great.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes.
Well, we'll put the title and the authors on the website yes. so you don't have to know. I'm curious. Okay, one more, Jill, before we hit the break.
Okay, The Complete Peanuts. The Complete Peanuts. This happens to be 1950 to 1952. And to give you an idea, Peanuts being the cartoon Peanuts by Schultz. And I just opened it up to see, you know, do they have any, and what have they got? And as it happens, they have an index to this book. And the index is snow, snowballs, snow dog, snowman, shoveling the walk, ice skating, and sledding. And they are, of course, hilarious for many people and not so hilarious for Charlie Brown. Here's one with Patty. Hi, Patty. May I come in? Shake all that snow off first and wipe your feet real good. I've changed my mind. It's not worth it. Charlie turns around. It's that sort of humor. And it's fun reading the ones that are from 1950 to 52 because presumably many of you will not. Some of you may remember it from then. I do not. But it's very fun. And here's one more. Charlie Brown looks out the window and he says, "It snowed last night. Oh, boy, where's my sled? Where's my overboots? I'll need my sweater and scarf and mittens and my woolly hat and my earmuffs and my heavy coat." And then you see him outside of his door and it says, "It's melted." And he's got his sled and everything. I mean, it's just very silly and very fun. And there happened to be a lot of snow comics in The Complete Peanuts.
I'm just amazed that there is, I guess I don't know why I'm amazed, but that's The Complete Peanuts and that there's an index.
I was very surprised by the index,
Somebody has categorized.
Somebody
all of
had
them.
A lot of fun. Presumably.
It's our monthly book show, and the theme today is snow. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Or send an email to thepoint@capeendislands.org. We'll have more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. I'm Amy Vince in for Mindy Todd. It's our monthly book show. And today, on this last day of 2025, our theme is snow. Joining us is retired librarian Jill Erickson and executive director of the Gatuit Library, Autumn Hassett. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Or send us an email at thepoint@capeendislands.org. Autumn, you're up. What have you got next?
All right, so my next book is Beartown by Frederick Backman. This is one of my probably top five books I've ever read. I feel like it should be required reading for adults and adolescents, teenagers for sure. It's set in a super snowy northern climate, and it's harsh. There's a lot of snow. It's in a hockey town. There's not much going on for these kids except the promise of maybe playing hockey professionally and kind of getting out of where they grew up. And there's a lot of life lessons, but the snow and the climate feels suffocating in this sense. So while there is some hope, the community really comes together. And this book teaches you about why community really needs to rally when you live in a harsh climate like this. And again, it's a lot of hockey. There's some really tough themes that happen in this, and it's very emotional and heavy. But I think if you read it, it's something that will definitely, I think it could change your life.
Wow.
But it's rough. It's a rough read.
It does not have a happy ending?
You know, not
it doesn't sound like it has a happy ending.
A happy ending per se. And there are two other books in the series. But again, it's Beartown by Frederick Backman. And this was translated because he's from, I believe he's from Sweden. And so all of his books are translated from Swedish to English. So I think that makes it a little bit extra special when you read it.
And so is this a young adult or would you say
Depends. Definitely for adults. I think young adults could probably read this maybe like 14, 15, but parental guidance. There are some heavy themes related to school shootings in this book. So it kind of depends on, you know, how you want to engage with your children or grandchildren, but also could be a great multi-generational read. Mm-hmm. If you read it together and just think about how times have changed, and give you something to talk about, you know, at a holiday gathering.
Right. And the title and author once again, please?
Bear Town by Frederick Backman.
Got it. Thank you. All right, Jill.
Well, I think I saw at least 10 books about this particular topic. The one I have in my hand is called The Snowflake Man, a biography of Wilson A. Bentley by Duncan Blanchard. And Wilson A. Bentley, did a lot of snow, looking at snowflakes. And it's really fascinating. I found this article that Maria Popova did on her website, The Marginalian, and she writes about this. Wilson Bentley, who was born February 9th, 1965, and maybe it was being born in February. He got so possessed by snow. And then he died December 23rd, 1931. Was 15 when his mother, aware of her son's sensitive curiosity and artistic bent, strained the family's means to give him a microscope for his birthday. Over the next 4 years, while Walt Whitman was exulting a state over that, quote, a leaf of grass is no less than the journey work of the stars, end quote, Wilson placed every curio he could find under his microscope, blades of grass, pebbles, insects. The day he managed to place a snowflake on the glass plate and to savor its microscopic perfection before it melted, he was besotted. Snowflakes became his life. Miracles of beauty, he called them. He began sketching what he saw through his microscope, but felt that his drawings failed to capture the full miraculousness before it vanished into liquid erasure. Although his father was already irate with the boy's artistic deviation from farm labor, fussing with snowflakes, rather than pulling potatoes, Wilson somehow persuaded him to invest in a camera. Weeks before his 20th birthday, he mounted his new 1.5-inch microscope eyepiece to the lens of his enormous view camera with its accordion like body fully extended. On January 15th, 1880, Wilson Bentley took his first photograph of a snowflake. And once you start looking into him, Wilson Bentley, you can see there are like 10, at least 10 books I found about him. This one is, in fact, a biography of Wilson Bentley by Duncan C. Blanchard, and it is, much like all of them, he was really possessed by looking for these snowflakes. And there are other volumes that have just his pictures from the photos that he took from all of that snow. And the reason this person wrote the book, he says, of all the reasons I had for writing this book, there is one that must be mentioned. While Bentley saw the snow crystals as a metaphor for beauty on earth, I saw Bentley himself as a metaphor for every person, be it ourselves or one of our neighbors down the street who has been laughed at or ridiculed for wanting to pursue a new idea. Were it not for his mother, who recognized the sensitive artistic temperament in her youngest son and constantly encouraged him in his pursuit of the beautiful in nature, Bentley would never have accomplished what he did. His own father and brother, until their dying days, thought he was wasting his time, quote, fussing with snowflakes, end quote. And for many years, until he became famous in the 1920s, most of his neighbors thought him, quote, a little cracked, end quote. So this is The Snowflake Man, a biography of Wilson A. Bentley by Duncan Blanchard. But believe me, there are many books about him, and any one of them, I think, would be equally interesting to what he was done. And there are some volumes are nothing but the photographs
that
he actually took.
That's what I would like to
see. Yeah. So go take a look for
I'm going to jump in with an email. We heard from Carol, who says, one of my all-time favorite winter picture books during my years at Eight Cousins is Over and Under the Snow by Kate Messner, illustrated by Christopher Silas Snow. The description, quote, over the snow, the world is hushed and white, but under the snow lies a secret world of squirrels and snow hares, bears and bullfrogs, and many other animals making their winter home under the snow. It reveals the tunnels and caves formed beneath the snow, where many kinds of animals
animals live through the winter safe and warm, awake and busy, but hidden beneath the snow. Thank you, Carol, for sharing that.
All right, Jill, I will just copycat on you because I have one of the volumes of the snow
with the pictures.
So that's great.
Oh, so, my goodness.
And this book was given to me along with The Snowflake Man by my mom when I was, I don't know, maybe in elementary school. And we were a big snow-loving family, loving to ski and all of that. And this book was just, it was a mesmerizing picture book for me. And I remember looking at it for hours.
And for the listener, it's black and white pages with images, about 12 to a page, of all the different snow crystals.
Yes.
And it's many pages.
Many pages. And I believe all of them, I think the one thing he figured out was that all snowflakes are unique, similar to our fingerprints. They're all completely unique, which I just found completely fascinating that things could fall from the sky and no two are alike on this massive planet. And I still feel that's just mind-blowing to me. But this book is definitely one that is really inspiring and maybe can invigorate a little scientist in the family with microscopes.
It makes me curious, too, how he was able to get just the individual snow crystal. Like what that process
the
was.
With the microscope.
Yeah.
But how
and
he took
it,
I can't
frozen
recall.
Long enough to take the image as well. Yeah, that's, I might have to look at that after the show.
I was going to say, I'm sure in the biography it explains it all, I'm sure. No doubt.
Okay, what have you got, Jill?
Okay, well, I've got a few picture books here. I always try to get a couple of picture books, but this one really caught my eye. It's called The Snow Theater, and I cannot pronounce the first name. It's R-A. It looks like the second name, A-R-A-I. Rahoji, I think it is. And it was translated from Japanese by David Boyd. And I first heard about this in Wall Street Journal. And the woman that does all of their children's books reviews had put a really great review in about this one book. She writes, sublime artwork and a mystical story of escape and forgiveness, a redemptive holiday feeling, even though the setting is no more specific than winter. Bringing to mind E.T.A. Hoffman's Nutcracker, this beautiful book follows a boy into snowy woods where he encounters tiny snow dancers and a snow queen who whirl and float on a magical illuminated stage. The colors here are vivid and intense, creating the sense that prismatic light is glancing off the snowflakes to dazzle the eye. As the boy is drawn into the enchanted scene, he puts a big worry behind him. He had come into the woods distressed about the accidental tearing of a page in his father's favorite book, which nobody ever wants to see happen. And now, as translated from the Japanese by David Boyd, we learn that all is well. The boy's father has come to take him home where he says there's hot cocoa waiting for us. And the illustrations in this are just beautiful. And the boy is just so interested in everything he's seeing. There's snow everywhere. At one point, he got up on stage to sing along. Spin, spin, top of snow, round and round, around you go. Spin in circles, spinning high, spin your way into the sky. The Snow Queen was also listening to their song. It's just this whole group that come to him. And it's sort of great because he's this kid that's sort of done this bad thing that he didn't want to do. But this whole group that are in snow world are just bring him right in. And I think that's one of the things so lovely about it. You know, he's done something wrong, but he goes to this other world and the other world takes him all in. He falls in love with them all. And then he's able to go back. So it's just a beautiful story. It's The Snow Theater. And Array, I think, is the author's last name, A-R-A-I. And it's lovely. And I also brought along two of the classic.
Yes.
Because how could I not bring Katie and the Big Snow by Virginia Lee Burton? And if you don't know who Katie is, Katie was a beautiful red crawler tractor. She was very big and very strong, and she could do a lot of things. And she could, of course, move snow. So that was when there was a very big blizzard, she comes to the rescue. It's as sweet as it was when I first read it.
And that's probably from the 50s, too,
oh,
right?
Yes. This
easily.
Is, yeah, oh, those are, absolutely. Yeah. I don't know exactly when, but yes, it would have been a long time ago. Oh, even earlier. I didn't. It was actually the copyright. I had no idea. Copyright was 1943.
Oh, wow.
So this is, and it's still in print. That is one of the, that's a real sign of a great picture book. If from 1943, it's still in print, yeah. That's pretty darn good. And I also brought along The Snowy Day by Ezra Jack Keats. This is the 50th anniversary edition. Includes 8 pages of special bonus material. I have to say, I was not engaged with the bonus material whatsoever. I don't think any child would be at all interested. I think if you're an adult and you're teaching this book or something, it would be good to have. I don't know why they, I guess because it was the 50th anniversary edition, they thought. So there's all this stuff in the back about the author and how it got made and the awards and so forth. I didn't think that either. It just seemed not necessary in a picture book. But the picture book itself has stood up over many, many years, and it is just a little a boy walking through. As it begins, one winter morning, Peter woke up and looked out the window. Snow had fallen during the night. It covered everything as far as he could see. After breakfast, he put on his snowsuit and ran outside. The snow was piled up very high along the street to make a path for walking. And he goes all through the snow. And I will say that one of the things that I did learn in this extra part at the end of the book was that this was Ezra Jack Keats' first book that he did everything for. And after that, he continued to do picture books. So that was sort of interesting, and I did not know that. And they also talk about him as being one of the first people to create a realistic, friendly, multi-ethnic urban setting in picture books for young children. So it's a fabulous book, and no matter what copy you have, it's still a fabulous story, The Snowy Day by Ezra Jack Keats.
And if you saw the cover, I think all of us remember that iconic red snowsuit. I still remember that as a kid, trudging through the white snow. Yeah.
Yes, the color is fabulous. Yeah. The color is fabulous.
What's up, Autumn?
Well, I have another psychological thriller. This is Rock, Paper, Scissors by Alice Feeney. And if you look at the cover, you might not know it's a psychological thriller. It's a beautiful setting. There's a teeny tiny house. Looks really picturesque. But I feel like the cover of this, snow, that it just says it all. But this story is about a husband and wife, and they've had some troubles in their marriage. They are going away on an anniversary trip. I believe they've been married for about 10 years. But the husband has facial blindness, so he can't tell who people are. And this book is filled with many twists. Alice Feeney, this was the first book I read by her, and this really got me to fall in love with her as one of those like palate cleanser authors. If you need a really quick thriller read set alone in a deserted area. Well, it seems deserted. I don't want to give too much
and
away.
And this relaxes you, does it? You know?
While she knits, she's reading.
It's a problem. I'm a millennial. I don't know. I can't help it. But Rock, Paper, Scissors by Alice Feeney was the first one I read by her, and I completely fell in love with it.
All right. You are listening to The Point, and today, our monthly book show, the theme is snow. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626, or send an email to thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. I'm Amy Vince in for Mindy Todd. It's our monthly book show today. Our theme is snow. Joining us, retired reference librarian Jill Erickson and the executive director of the Kituat Library, Autumn Hassett. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626, or send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. I've forgotten whose turn is it? Who's up next?
Jill is up.
Oh, Jill, you're up.
I'm up. All right. Well, here's another thing that I mentioned when I wrote the promo, where it was about diaries and journals. And I assume that there would be a lot written about in people's diaries and journals when they're writing them. I feel like when I write in my journal, I write about snow from time to time. There should be something. And I did find a few things, although not as many as I expected. But this one I really love because I've had this book. This is another book that I've had for a very long time. And it's called Journal of a Solitude by Mae Sarton. And many of you may know Mae Sarton. She wrote a lot of novels, but she also wrote, published a bunch of her journals, and this one happens to be published. And it has got a lot of snow in it because at this point she's living in Maine. And so in Maine, you're going to find quite a bit of snow. Although not, I have to say, I was looking through a bunch of journals and diaries, and oddly, there did not seem to be as much snow as I thought there would be. Why are they ignoring the snow? I don't know. Maybe it was a warm year when they were writing. But even I was sure that Virginia Woolf would have written like lots about snow. No, she didn't. There were things that she wrote in fiction, but not in her journals. In any case, this is a little bit from Journal of Solitude by Mae Sarton. This is January 2nd, and she writes, "Begin again where this long hiatus of Christmas and the book's publication began just a month ago. I can understand people simply fleeing the mountainous effort Christmas has become, even for those like me without children. Everyone must feel revolt, as I do, about the middle of December, when I'm buried under the necessity of finding presents, the immense effort of wrapping and sending, and the never-ended guilt about unsent cards, about letters. But there are always a few saving graces, and finally, they make up for all the bother and distress. One such moment came as I turned into Harrisville from Dublin and saw what looked at first like a prehistoric animal coming toward me. Then I realized that it was a Christmas tree carried on a man's shoulder pointed toward me. There he was, bringing home the tree through the silent, woodsy, white world. We had a huge snow, 15 inches, December 16th. Luckily, it had been announced, and I managed to get Judy and the two cats up here a day early. So we enjoyed it in perfect peace, open fires burning, and the moony, whirling world outside, as if we were in the center of a snowing glass paperweight," which are also wonderful things, paperweight,
snow globes.
And here's some from Paula Moterson Becker. This is from the Letters and Journals. And she was an artist, and she writes, this is in 1906, January 17th. "My dear Millie, here we are back home again, sitting under the lamp in our cozy brown living room. We had a simply wonderful trip, staying with the Hauptmanns in the Riesengebirge. We really learned what snow and winter mean. The landscape, which hadn't particularly impressed us last summer, was glorious this time. The snow-covered mountains lay there before us, grand and serious, partly hidden by a cloudy sky. The Hauptmanns had invited a charming and interesting group of people, among them Mayor Reich and his wife and the sociologist Sombart. At table and after meals, there were always interesting discussions going on among the men." And so she talks more about it being cold and snowy, but it is also just a great journal in general. And that it's not often that you get journals and letters in the same volume, but you do with this. It's Paula Moterson Becker. Again, she was an artist. And it's the Letters and Journals.
Thank you. Okay, Autumn.
All right. So my next book is The Sanatorium by Sarah Pierce. And I read this book as part of a book club pick several winters ago. And it's the first book in a trilogy following Detective Elin Warner. And she's taking some time off from her job as a detective. Obviously stressful, needs some time off. So she decides to go to an engagement celebration for her brother and new sister-in-law at a hotel in Switzerland. And it used to be a sanatorium, but it's been redone. So hopefully not as creepy, but definitely still has some creepy, haunting vibes to it. And her future sister-in-law goes missing. And since she's off the job, she needs to start trying to figure out, like, her natural instinct kicks in. How do I help find my future sister-in-law and what happens? And this book made me think about red nail polish differently. And, I mentioned earlier that I just love books that take place in a setting where you're disconnected from the world and there's a major storm. It disconnects the hotel. Even the funicular, that Swiss elevator that gets you out of the resort, is broken. So they're truly trapped until power is restored. And it's super creepy. I thought it was really well done. I had never read her until I read this book. And I've read all three of them in this series. And I think I like this one the most because I just love the winter setting. The other ones are more Caribbean. And I love the winter one. I don't know. So this was The Sanatorium by Sarah Pierce.
And I
have a quick one. We heard from Ellie in Woods Hole, sort of along the same vein. She suggests Miss Milla's Feeling for Snow. Is anyone familiar with this? It's a 1992 Danish crime novel by Peter, and it's Danish, so I can't pronounce his last name, H-O-E-G, about Smilla Jaspersen, a half-Greenlandic glaciologist in Copenhagen who investigates the suspicious death of a young Greenlandic boy, Isaiah. All right, and Miss Smilla's Feeling for Snow.
Okay, Jill.
Okay, well, here is a book called Skiing in Massachusetts, Images of Sports by Cal Conniff and E.J.B. Allen. It is one of the Arcadia Publishing books, and which means it's got a lot of photos, and it's got a lot of pieces of information about whatever the topic happens to be, in this case, skiing in Massachusetts. And I didn't know there was such a big, I mean, I knew people skied in Massachusetts, but it turns out that they, back in the 20s, they really spent a lot of time. And one of the great things about this book is he's got all these photos in here of people who are skiing or getting ready to ski. They also have, and I happen to love trains, and there's this whole section on what were called snow trains, and it was all these people who were coming from New York City and going to Massachusetts to go use the skiing that they wanted to. And this was the ad for snow trains. Weekends to the Berkshire's White Mountains of, and in this case it was New Hampshire, but and the Green Mountains of Vermont. Ride the famous New Haven snow trains to the ski centers of New England. Service from New York, Bridgeport, New Haven, Waterbury, Hartford, and Providence. Write, phone, or call personally at the New Haven Ski Bureau, Grand Central Terminal, for information regarding snow train movements and hotel accommodations in the snow country. One-day show trains to the Berkshires. And they were also from Boston. You could go from Boston to Maine with one of these trains. You could just, and I'm sure there was also a bit about Massachusetts, coming to Massachusetts. And here's another snow train. That snow train ads are really very funny because they seem so dated. But 1946, this is the kind of things you don't know until you read this book. In 1946, railroad engineer Jesse Richardson wrote, quote, "The snow train song." Quote, "High up in the mountains, let's take a day to be joyful. Winter sports we'll find. Out where the skies are blue, let's put on our snow togs. It will be fun on the snow train and leave the world behind riding along with you." And apparently this is what they all sang when they got on the train, so just sort of amazing. And so it's full of history about skiing and snow training and the various different places in Massachusetts where people were skiing. And it is, here's another piece, just it's called Massachusetts State Ski Championship. So there clearly were a lot of contests going as well as just the regular skiing. And they did, even then, were making artificial snow, which seems unbelievable.
It does seem surprising. Yeah.
But there's this whole thing for 1951 and 52, apparently, they installed snow making. The small area closed in 1995. That it had lived from 1951 to 1995 is pretty amazing. And if you look at I'm going to show the photo.
Is that the apparatus for making the snow?
The apparatus for making the snow. The photographs are really fascinating. Like,
yes.
Really?
That
snow?
That
it's
antique?
Hard to believe. But skiing in Massachusetts is just a fun book to look at. Images of Sports, Cal Conniff and E. John B. Allen.
Got it. All right, Autumn.
All right, so I am moving on from the thrillers, and I am moving into nonfiction.
No more nightmares.
My next book is Snow, A Scientific and Cultural Exploration by Giles Whittell. And I was drawn to this book because it has a beautiful snowflake on the front, but I was also intrigued when it said a cultural exploration. And this book is just super interesting because it goes through how we value snow and how it becomes essentially part of our culture, from prehistoric fish the early humans who trekked and skied across it tens of thousands of years ago, and even the multi-billion dollar industry of snow moving, making, and playing in the snow. So it really has crossed many, many boundaries over the years. And the one thing I thought that was so beautiful on the jacket of this book is it talks about Johannes Kepler, who was the first person to meticulously sketch and ponder why snowflakes formed as a six-cornered starlet. But in the book, there is a Q&A, and it tells you that they are not always six-pointed. Most of the time they are, but he was the first person to really start to study that. And then it also highlights Henry David Thoreau, who called snowflakes, quote, glorious spangles, the sweep of heaven's floor, end quote. And I just thought that was such a lovely way to talk about snow. And with Henry David Thoreau being so central to life in New England, I knew this would be a good pick. And secondly, when I told my trustee president that I was coming on the book show, he immediately wanted to give me some book recommendations, of course.
That's great.
And so Carl, he mentioned that he was like, you should include something from Little House on the Prairie, like Laura Ingalls Wilder. Mm-hmm. And I thought what was so interesting is when I opened up this book, the introduction reads, in 1867, a sister was born to a little girl who lived on a homestead in Wisconsin. They were pioneers. Home was a log cabin their father had built in woods on the north bank of the Mississippi. In the summer, the woods gave shade, and from November to May, like sleeping bears, they surrendered to the snow. The family moved west as the girls grew up, but life in the snowbound woods held a special place in the younger sister's memory. Her name was Laura Ingalls Wilder, and years later she described a winter's day in the cabin. And it goes on to talk about what she wrote in the books. And so I thought that was kind of a neat tie-in, you know, to honor my president as and his excitement for me going on the show. But the Q&A in the back of the book is also really interesting because it talks a lot about you know, the different theories we have about snow, like, is it true that no two snowflakes are alike? That is absolutely true, also according to this book. And fun fact, how many flakes are needed to make a snow person? It's about 100 million, which is a lot.
Who counted? That's what I would like to know.
I don't know. Before it melted? Impossible. So this is Snow, a Scientific and Cultural Exploration by Giles Whittell. And it is at the library, if you want to check it out.
Check it out. Act fast.
Okay. Well, I have a very large book in front of me. So it's called, and it's full of beautiful paintings. It's called Impressionists in Winter, which was, in fact, it was put up as a display at one point in time, and it presents the first, according to the preface of the book, presents the first thorough investigation of the subject of Impressionist winter landscape. No exhibition and no publications in the literature on Impressionism have been devoted to this theme before, that is to say, before this book came out. While such a thematic approach might seem at first blush a superficial one, the subject of this exhibition goes to the heart of one of the central issues of Impressionism, a dedication to painting specific effects of weather and light that is unprecedented in the history of art. The subject of winter, clearly the most inhospitable season for plein air painting, provides some of the most exceptional and most spellbindingly beautiful paintings in Impression. And it really is. It was part of the Phillips collection, and they then brought it to where it moved around from place to place for a while when it first came out. And I wish that I had gotten there but the reproductions, I have to say, are really good in this book. It's a very oversized book, so be prepared to do your weights before you bring it home. But it is really, the paintings are just gorgeous. And there's a lot of history about the artists. And it is a lovely, lovely book. It's called Impressionists in Winter.
Okay, we have time, about a minute left. So we have time for one more from you, Autumn. Please.
All right, so my last book is The Snowy Cabin Cookbook by Marnie Hanell and Jen Stevenson. So this is definitely closing on a cozy note. And
excellent.
What I love about this book is it goes through and it explains hygge, that Swedish, like being cozy in socks by the fire and warm. It tells you how to do it with scented candles. It has tons of cozy recipes, and it talks about ski chalet recipes if you want to eat on the slopes, bringing some appetizers. So it's kind of a fun cookbook, and it also has a board game It's kind of wintry
right inside,
and fun. So
yeah.
It's a really fun book.
And the title of that one again?
Is The Snowy Cabin Cookbook by Marnie Hanel and Jen Stevenson.
And later today, we'll post a list of all the books we discussed this hour at our website, capeandislands.org. Jill Erickson, retired reference librarian, and Autumn Hassett, executive director of the Kitiut Library. Thanks to you both for coming in. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Best wishes to everyone for the new year. I'm Amy Vinson from Indie Todd. Thanks for listening.